Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to Rare Bird Radio. This is Tyson Cornell. I'm here with Leslie Stranadl, one of the co-authors of Bulgaria, the Other Places Travel Guide. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Tyson.
And we should have our co-author, Leslie's co-author, Patrick Eardley, calling in as well. But he's in Kentucky, right?
Yes, he is.
Good. So maybe I thought maybe we could start with you just giving a brief overview of the book, how it came out, how it came to be, and really how both you and Patrick got into this whole Bulgaria thing.
Sure. The book is published by Other Places Publishing, which is a startup publishing company founded by a returned Peace Corps volunteer. And I found out about it through the returned Peace Corps volunteer network. Once I did and looked into it and pursued it, I quickly ascertained that it would be helpful if I could co-author a Bulgaria travel guide with someone who was actually in Bulgaria. And Patrick, who I knew from my days as a Peace Corps volunteer in Bulgaria, was still living there. So I reached out to him, and he was interested, and we decided to author the travel guide together.
Wow. So when did you actually first go over there?
I went in 2005 and was there until 2007, and Patrick was there, he arrived in 2006, and he moved back to the States in 2012.
And what was the impetus for this? I mean, why Bulgaria? And
When I applied to be a Peace Corps volunteer, I mentioned that I would be interested in going anywhere in the world. And based on when I applied, the program for Bulgaria was departing soon. So that's how it came to be Bulgaria. So it was happenstance, I guess.
And did you know a whole lot about Bulgaria before that?
I did not, and I do pride myself on being good with geography, but I must admit that I had to look at a map to determine where Bulgaria was, it is located directly north of Greece, so that I thought, okay, I know where Greece is, but it's tucked away in the far southeastern corner of Europe. And I had been to Europe several times, but certainly not to that part of it. And I didn't know that the official language was Bulgarian, and I didn't know that the alphabet was a Cyrillic alphabet. So it was all very new to me, but exciting at the same time.
Wow. And so, I mean, if it is right next to Greece, and it's relatively Western in geography...
Yes.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but why the obscurity?
The obscure, I think, partly because in the 20th century it was a communist country. It had a lot of trade with Russia as well. Also, historically, it's had more of an agrarian economy that did change. During communism, I think part of its obscurity is because of where it's located and because of the communist era, people couldn't travel there, and Bulgarians certainly couldn't travel.
Sure.
Outside of the country. So I think that had a lot to do with it.
And what are some? I mean, even in the communist period, are there reference points that that people can balance off of? Are there people from Bulgaria that we may know, or certain events that may have happened that are more part of a global history?
During the communist period, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I do know that shortly after the Berlin Wall fell, one of the reasons that communists fell in Bulgaria was just because of the wave of communism falling throughout Eastern Europe, and there was a pro-environmental political group that became more active, and they were really behind finally changing the political system there and bringing awareness to the fact that something had to change. But I can't think of a political figure off the top of my head that was in the news or did something revolutionary by him or herself during that time.
Well, it's just amazing. And so maybe you can tell us a little bit about when the two of you were first on the ground over there. I mean, what did you do, and what was it like?
When I arrived, and I arrived a 1 year prior to Patrick, again, I did not know much about the country, and for a brief period when I first arrived, I did live with a host family. I had a host mother, and I was very fortunate in that she spoke English, and she had been a former Bulgarian teacher. So in addition to taking language classes during the day, she was instrumental in helping me with my language skills. But then when I moved away and was on my own, again, it was a daily struggle to not only learn the language but use the language and then also become integrated in Bulgarian society. I was living in a small town. I had most recently lived in Washington, D.C. So in addition to the language and the culture, I was also grappling with having moved from a major city to a very small town, where life was very quiet and certainly much slower paced. To be honest, it was probably a good 12 months before I felt very comfortable and felt like I had acclimated.
Yeah, I bet. And was that really different for you? I mean, life before that?
Yes, living in D.C. where things were faster paced, at a faster pace, and then transitioning to a slower pace, yes, it was. But part of my interest in becoming a Peace Corps volunteer was doing something different, doing something outside of my comfort zone. So I just had to keep that in mind, and I took it literally day by day. But I was fortunate in that I was surrounded by very hospitable and friendly people. I think that's indicative of Bulgarians as a whole. They're very warm, and they were inviting and would invite me to their homes for dinner and to be part of their lives. So it didn't happen overnight, but it did happen, I would say, relatively quickly. And so that was nice. It was nice not having to deal with people being, what's the word, hostile. They were very open and friendly.
At least that's nice to hear. Patrick, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Patrick.
Can you hear me?
Well, welcome. Good morning.
Good morning.
And you're calling from back east.
Yes, I'm calling from Kentucky.
There you go. So we've talked a little bit about the two of you going over to Bulgaria, and that, you know, both of your work in the Peace Corps. Can you give a little idea of what it was like for you and some of your intentions for going over there?
Certainly. Before I left to go to join the Peace Corps, I worked in social services here in Kentucky. And for me, I was looking for an opportunity to be able to, broaden my experience and learn new things and, you know, maybe learn something and be able to bring it back to my career back in the United States. What happened was after I served as a Peace Corps volunteer, I ended up staying in Bulgaria for 3 additional years teaching at a private elementary school. During my Peace Corps service, I lived in a town called Vidin, which was in the northwest on the Danube. And there I was placed with the community center that worked with children in the Roman neighborhood. And I did different projects during my time. I helped remodel the community center, and I formed a baseball league with the kids and did general other activities. There was some, you know, fundraising. I did a clothing drive, things like that.
Wow. That's amazing. And do you outline some of the stuff in the book, or is that more just a personal story?
It's a personal story. And you know, my organization, I don't know, was really set up to receive international volunteers, you know, who are just looking to volunteer in their free time. You know, the projects are so varied from year to year. I don't know if they really have a consistent way to accept volunteers. But, you know, they definitely appreciate community support, you know, and it is a great organization. You know, it's working right in the Roman neighborhood, which, you know, a lot of foundations kind of shy away from because they're concerned about safety, so.
Mm-hmm. And so when you guys came back, what was the impetus for doing this book? I mean, Leslie, we know that you stumbled across the publisher who was a former Peace Corps volunteer, but what really made you guys want to do a book?
When I returned from Bulgaria, I was just very eager to share my experience there with my family and friends. And also, I had always been drawn to writing. And so when I found out about the opportunity, I pursued it because it gave me an opportunity to share with others a lot about the culture of Bulgaria. And I liked the idea of writing a book. And so those two interests came together. But when I went to Bulgaria, the intent was to serve as a Peace Corps volunteer. And, you know, the travel guide was not on my radar. So to return to the U.S. and have that happen was a very nice surprise and something that was unexpected.
Mm-hmm. But why a travel guide and not your own travel memoir?
I found having lived in Bulgaria and again having to learn the language, I discovered that not a lot of people at that time in Bulgaria spoke fluent English in the travel world. And so I thought it would be very helpful to provide an insider's perspective of how do you travel around the country by bus and rail, and where should you stay? Because I found from living there that, you know, I was aware of places to stay besides the, for example, larger hotels. And so I thought that I had a lot of knowledge to share with others that I thought would be helpful. Also, because Bulgaria is off the beaten path and it's not a popular destination for Americans, I wanted to bring attention to it because it's got a lot to offer. There's skiing, there's the Black Sea coast, there are wineries. So the travel opportunities are numerous.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the things that you guys feature in this book that aren't in other guides that you felt was being neglected besides maybe what you describe as things off the beaten path?
I think go ahead.
Well, one of the things that I think is right off the bat is, you know, I had read some of the other travel guides about Bulgaria, and something that was disappointing was they painted a lot of the places outside of Sofia in a very negative light. You know, they would talk about how infrastructure was failing or how there was nothing to do, and I felt like that just wasn't true at all because there's lots of really wonderful places in the countryside that I think are very idyllic. And, you know, with if infrastructure is how we're rating, I guess, how good something is, I mean, I don't really feel like that's fair, so.
Sure, exactly. And are a lot of the other guides relatively contemporary, or?
Contemporary in the sense that
your book, I mean, it has come out in the last year.
Yeah.
But the previous guide to that, I mean, is it a lot of rehashed information, or is it?
A lot of the information was out of date.
Yeah.
You know, I did glance at the travel guides while I was in Bulgaria, the ones that I could, you know, get a hold of, and a lot of the information was out of date. I mean, it was, you know, maybe the information was correct at the first edition, but by, you know, the fourth or the fifth edition, you know, it no longer applied. So. And I noticed that especially there were a lot of updates with their transportation network. And,
sure.
You know, in I don't want to name any names, but, I mean, in some of the other books, some of the information just wasn't correct.
Yeah.
And I also discovered that in for example, in smaller towns, there may be one accommodation listed in the other travel guide. But from Patrick's and my knowledge, we were aware of guest houses that we found out about through Bulgarians or other Peace Corps volunteers. So I think that's also something that our guide or this particular Bulgaria guide offers, as well as in the Bulgaria travel guide, we've also talked in depth about the culture and cultural nuances and how Bulgarians behave and act, and I think that is different from other travel guides as well. So what the reader can expect once he or she is there and how Bulgarians will interact with them.
Sure. And are there a lot of people in your own lives that you've convinced to go to Bulgaria? And if so, what are the experiences they might have had?
I have some friends in Germany, and I did share with them my experience. And so during a summer, they did vacation there, and they said they would not have gone had I not told them about them. So I thought that was positive.
One of the things I noticed when I lived in Sofia is that I was a member of a network called Couchsurfing, which is a website that's free. And how it works is people contact you, and you host them in your home. And then the idea is that maybe if you were to go visit them, they would also host you. So, you know, being that I was an English speaker, I did get a lot of messages from people who were coming through Sofia wanting, you know, looking for a place to stay. And also, I was friends with another organization called the Free Sofia Tour, and we were actually featured on an interview together on Bulgarian television. And I talked about, I have a blog in connection with the book, and the tour guides were there talking about their tour. But a lot of the visitors that come through Sofia, they were, you know, I kept hearing, I'm on the way to Turkey, I'm on my way to Istanbul, or I'm on my way to Greece. You know, it was like a stopover destination for people going somewhere else. You know, because I love Bulgaria, I wanted to let them know that there are other things out there that are just incredible, you know, and they're unique, and, you know, they haven't been, you know, trampled upon, and there's just so much great stuff going on in Bulgaria, but people don't know about it. You know, I mean, you go through Sofia, and, you know, the information is about Sofia, but not about the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm. And what about the food? I mean, what kind of food can people expect?
Pies, lots of pies. Well, I mean, not pies and, like, you know, the traditions of American pie, but like a lot of like puff pastry stuff.
Yes, there's a grilled meat is popular. I would say it's definitely a meat and potatoes based cuisine, and salads, lots of salads.
So it is akin to a Mediterranean palate, right?
Yeah,
it's
a mix. You know, it's a mix of East and Western European and Greek. There's some, you know, a lot of the food looks like Greek food. You know, some of the food looks like Russian food. Some of the food is Turkish. some of the food is Bulgarian in origin. There's a dish called kachemak, which is kind of like grits. That, you know, when I was staying with my host family in the village, he leans in close to me and he's like, Bulgarians have been eating this dish for 1,000 years. You know, it's like, he was just so proud of it, you know. And the other thing is about, you know, all the food is really fresh. There's a lot of people making their own food. You know, when I lived in Sofia, I personally didn't have any goats, so I couldn't get fresh goat's milk. But if I wanted it, all I had to do was to go to the bus stop, and there was a lady that came in from a village, and she would sell things she'd made throughout the week, you know, to make extra money. So, you know, I can get a kilo of homemade goat cheese at the bus stop for $3, and it was delicious. It was incredible, you know. And, I mean, that's like the greatest thing about Bulgaria is the Bulgarians are very resourceful, and they know how to make this stuff, and it's all very traditional, and it's delicious, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what, how expensive is it to travel to Bulgaria and survive there as opposed to some of the other comparable destinations that people might go to, like Greece or Turkey, or, you know, as you described?
Compared to Greece and Turkey, it is relatively inexpensive. However, Patrick, having just returned from there, may have some more insight. But I do recall that it was it was inexpensive compared to, say, Western Europe. And food is inexpensive. Traveling around the country is relatively inexpensive. I think, you know, you could travel by bus for probably less than $20 when I left in 2007. The hotels can be pricier, but again, if you're willing to stay off the beaten path, I would say accommodations are very reasonable too.
Yeah, and an example I can give is this past summer I had gone to the Black Sea coast, and I stayed actually in an old, you know, campground that had been built during the socialist times, and I think you could stay for right around $3 or $4 a night, and it was a bungalow. I mean, there was no air conditioning, but they did provide a bathroom and a fridge, you know, and we're right on the beach, and it's just incredible. And you know, rail and bus is still very cheap. I mean, coming from Sofia, the capital, you know, a trip out to the Black Sea coast, which is about 6 hours, a round trip that costs is about $35. So, and, you know, it's still very inexpensive. 2 weeks on the Black Sea coast might have cost me about $300 in total, you know?
Oh, wow. That's remarkable. I mean,
yeah, a lot of it's just about knowing how, you know, the campgrounds are a great deal because most of the campgrounds have bungalows. You know, they're not... It's a little more rustic. It's not exactly luxurious, but, you know, it's sufficient when you're going to be spending most of your time on the beach anyway. And, you know, some of the newer hotels, you know, you can find deals going through a Bulgarian, you know, travel agency. You can find things as cheap as, you know, $30, $40, $50 a night right on the beach. So.
Wow. And go ahead.
Patrick, could you share some information about the hijas as well, if people were skiing or jumping the mountains?
What's incredible about Bulgaria is, you know, during the socialist times, they had the government paid a lot of attention to nature and preserves, and you know, Bulgaria has a lot of mountain ranges, and all of the mountain ranges are preserved in some sort of national park. And in these national parks, they have, you know, lodges, I guess is a good way to describe it, and they're dormitory style. Kind of like hotels or hostels that are very rustic. I mean, it's sometimes, you know, running water is only available for a couple hours, or electricity might be on during the evening only. You know, but a lot of them are up on the mountaintop. I mean, you know, you hike 6 hours up and you're 6,000 feet up. And, you know, and they're also very cheap because they exist for hikers and people who are, you know, having recreation time on the mountain. So, you know, the one on top of Vitosha, which is right outside of Sofia, for example, Aleko, that's one of the older hijas, and that one, I think you can stay there for about $6 a night. And you're in a dormitory, they provide sheets and blankets and everything. There's a communal bathroom, but, you know, it's sufficient if you're, you know, having recreation time. Not a lot of privacy, but definitely interesting.
And what are some other places that you might recommend right off the bat?
One of the things that comes to mind that people are always very excited to see is a place called Belogradchik, which is in the northwestern part of Bulgaria, and it's a fortress that's been built into some dramatically shaped sandstone rocks. And from afar, it kind of looks like a castle, and then the rocks look like candles on a birthday cake. And it's really such a cool place. And, you know, a lot of the times I would go, because I lived in the northwest, and it was easy for me to get there, and I would be the only person there. And I had this entire castle to myself, and it was really cool.
Also, throughout the country, there are monasteries, and we do mention this in the travel guide. And monasteries can be inexpensive places to stay as well, and obviously quiet. So that's another option.
And what is the if you are staying in a monastery? I mean, what is are those the complimentary lodging? Do they charge? Is it mandatory donation or requested donation?
They usually ask for a donated fee. I would say it's usually under $10.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think men and women are allowed to sleep in the same room unless they're married. I think I remember this being a rule. However, you know, there are separate rooms for men and women. You know, and the monasteries they do exist as kind of like a retreat. And some monasteries are stricter than others. It's all very specific to the monastery. And, you know, sometimes when I went to the monastery with my host family in Peace Corps, they packed a lunch for the priests. That was kind of like an offering to them. And, you know, there's a sense in the village that they would take care of the priests that live at the monastery. But, you know, a lot of them are out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, that was the whole point, is that, you know, you live in isolation, so.
Yeah, right. Well, when are you guys going back?
Oh, as soon as I can.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be going back, I think, in the summertime.
And when, Patrick, did you get back?
I came back August 27th, so I've been here for about 3.5 months.
And then you want to go back this summer, right?
Oh, yeah, of course I want to go back. It's like a second home to me, I mean.
Oh, that's great.
One of my friends is getting married, and I want to go to the wedding. So I will be going back in the summertime.
That's amazing. Well, yeah, it sounds like a great place, and I know what that's like traveling around the world and finding little pockets that when you go home, you know, it's like an experience that maybe a lot of other people can't relate to, and you want to express that. So can you guys tell us a little bit about where the book's available at? And
yes, our publisher's website is www.otherplacespublishing.com. It's also available through Amazon as well as Barnes & Noble.
Great. And
if I remember correctly, there is a Kindle version available.
Yes, there is a Kindle version, yes.
Great. And independent booksellers. And
yes.
I want to push everybody to go to the goodreads.com site and check the book out there, as well as a lot of the other discussions that I'm seeing populating a little bit more every day. So thanks a lot, guys, and I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
All right, take care.
You too.